All right, welcome in. Hayden Field, site of the third annual Xavier World Series of Softball game. Rick Broering here. And to start this podcast off, we've got a special guest, one of the GMs of today's game, Rashid Gaston. Now, Rashid, you and Miles picked these two teams. Tell me about the strategy. What were you shooting for when you put your roster together?
Well, both of us were shooting for the number one selection. Everyone who has watched these Xavier World Series knows that J.P. McCure is the best player on the team as far as baseball goes. So he was going to easily be overall number one selection. So we both won the first pick. And then after that, the strategy was just to pick all the white guys in the room first. And then we picked everybody else after that.
Now, you got here a little bit later last year. Did you play in last year's game? I can't even recall.
No, sir.
So this is your first game. There's a lot of excitement, a lot of bragging rights on the line. What has the trash talk been like leading up to this game? Has there been a lot of talk off the field?
Oh, yes, sir, definitely. We've been going at it about all week now, ever since we picked teams for sure on Monday. So, I mean, we're really excited about it right now. And can't wait to get going.
All right, first of all, can you hold this a little closer to your mouth here so that people can hear you? This summer, I think fans are really excited to see you on the court. You were with the team all last year. They got to see you around but didn't get to see you play. What has the summer been like for you? What have you been able to work on, and what have you seen from this team?
Oh, the summer has been really great. I've been able to work on, like, as far as my conditioning, strength, post moves, jump shooting, just everything. And just being around the guys, getting more chemistry with the people I'm playing with next year. So I'm really excited for this season.
Last year you came in and you have a couple older post players that have been around the program for a while, and James and Jalen. Those guys are gone now. You kind of have that leadership role in the post as the oldest guy there. What has that been like, and how have you worked with some of the younger guys to sort of get them going here in the summer?
Well, it was a great experience being able to play and practice with James and Jalen over the year. I mean, obviously those guys taught me a lot, being veteran post players. So, I mean, I'm just trying to implement some of the same qualities that they taught me into the young guys that we got, like Tyreek and everything like that. So, I mean, just trying to help them, like, get adjusted to the college basketball and the physicality and just learning the footwork and everything like that, and just making sure they stay focused and having fun with it at the same time. So, just doing that.
So for all the fans who haven't seen you play yet, how would you describe your game? What are you going to bring to the floor this year?
A low post offensive and defensive presence. I'm really good at scoring on the block. I have a lot of variety of moves. I honestly added to, like, my arsenal of offense. And just on defense, just being strong, physical, good rebounder, you know, just playing tough, talking, trying to be a leader out there, everything like that. So definitely be a big hustle energy guy.
Since you came here, it looks like Sean O'Mara's lost a lot of weight this offseason. His body looks to be in better condition. Have you noticed a difference from him in workouts and things this summer? Has it made a difference for him?
Definitely. Sean is a lot more explosive now. He's way more, you know, active around the rim and everything. He runs the floor so much better now, and his stamina and everything is up. So that's going to be a really, really big 1-2 punch again, just like you guys had last year.
All right, that's Rashid Gaston. Rashid, enjoy the game. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Team Gaston.
All right, we're back. It's the bottom of the first inning here at the Xavier Softball World Series. We are here with our second guest of the day, and that is the captain of Team Davis, Miles. You had the number one pick. You got last year's MVP at J.P. McCure. The top of the first, though, a lot of errors. You guys get down 7-0. What'd you tell your guys back there in the dugout?
It's okay. It's a long game. It's our first time playing in a long time. But once we got our feet under us and we made a couple catches, we'll be all right. But we got to understand they play defense also, so, you know, I got to – good group of guys. You know, we plan on making this a nice little interesting inning.
Now, obviously, you got last year's MVP with JP, but yep. But how else? Who else did you look at when you were putting together this roster as nice pieces that you wanted to add?
Of course, JP is a huge pick for us, and, you know, a big time pick. My first three were JP. These guys actually are scoring right now. JP, Tim Stainbrook, Alex Bergen. You know, I wanted to go with athletic guys, guys who knew the game, guys, you know, can carry us, you know.
Alex Bergen actually just had a deep shot out to right field, and he ends up scoring off that. So you guys are now 7-5, only
exactly.
Down by two.
Exactly.
Big bottom half of the inning here. No outs still in the inning.
Yep.
Miles, let's talk about this offseason a little bit. You're heading into your final year of eligibility.
Yep.
a guy like you has been around for so long. You've improved your game every year. At this point, how'd you approach the offseason? What were you trying to work on? What were you looking to improve?
Each year I try to find something to get better at because, obviously, you know, I'm never not perfect. Trying to work on my ball handling skills, becoming a better point guard. You know, it's been 4 years, and I'm still trying to work on being a better leader for my team. And you know, just being an everyday guy. You know, I have the ability. I have the credentials and stuff that I need. You know, it's just mostly about, you know, just putting in the work. Did a lot of work, you know, off the court, trying to get the new guys in and get them acclimated to things. But, you know, it's just a lot of just hard work in the summer. That's always what we try to do each summer.
Now, you guys don't have a very deep backcourt necessarily this year, but you have guys who are experienced. The one newcomer in the mix will be Quentin Gooden.
Yes.
How has he adapted so far his first month or so on campus? What have you seen out of the freshman Quentin Gooden?
To me, Quentin is really good. You know, I think he's more experienced than a lot of freshmen coming into college. He's strong. He's freakishly athletic. He can handle the ball. Working on his jump shot, getting better at that. The thing is, it's just him getting used to college basketball, him understanding our pace, him understanding our intensity and how things go. The good thing is we got a good group of older guys, experienced guys, like you said, that can help guide him. And I think Q would be a really good. Really good fit for us.
Edmund, another guy who had a great freshman season, but was still, you know, growing and learning a lot on the job. He's playing a lot of minutes, but also still learning through his mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the third out, so we'll let you get back out there. But real quick, just your final thoughts. Edmund Sumner, where is he at? Is he going to take another jump going into sophomore year, you think?
To me, Edmund is one of the best point guards in the country. Forget the Big East. I think he's one of the best point guards in the country, hands down. You're not going to find too many guys like Edmund. You know, he's a rare talent, a rare body form, everything about Ed. I feel like Ed worked hard this summer to become a better player, more mature player, understand the game of basketball more. Now he has his first full year down under his belt. And, you know, we just look for big things from Edmund.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Go back out there and take the field. Appreciate the time, man. All right. We're back here at Hayden Field. Middle of the sixth inning. Edmund, your strategy up at the plate today has been interesting. You have begged for walks. The last time it looked like you went for a swinging bunt. Is that correct? Was that the idea here? How would you describe your softball game?
Well, I'm doing a lot better than I did 2 years ago. So right now, to me, I'm playing great. Definitely up. The last 2 years, I don't think I even hit contact or got the first base. So. It's a lot better.
You guys up by 4 runs right now. There's a lot of trash talk coming from the other side. You feel good going into the final innings here up by 4?
Yeah, we got Miles up right now, which is a guaranteed out. So, yeah, we're good.
Just last week or maybe the week before that, you were at the Nike Skills Academy. First of all, take us through that. What type of things did you do? You were counseling high school players, right? But then also scrimmaging with other college guys and pros?
We didn't really counsel the high school. Like, we had 3 workouts a day. The first one consisted of off-court workouts. So we did – one time we did something like ignition. It was a lot of pushing sleds, little light jumping. Then second day we did sand work. And then the other day it was like we was on some random hill. And then in the middle of the day, we did a skill workout, just all skill. And at night, we played 5-on-5.
And who all was involved in the 5-on-5 games? There were pros playing with you, right?
Yeah, we had Tyler Euless, Devin Booker, Aaron Gordon, Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkston, Isaiah Thomas. Let's see who else. I think that was it.
Well, what's it like to play with guys who are where you want to get and at the professional level? What was it like to get into scrimmage with them and test yourself against them?
It was good to play against them, but I also played with them. Like, I had Aaron Gordon on my team, and I also had Isaiah Thomas, which he's a point guard, so I had to play the two. So it was just good to get a good feel for Isaiah Thomas' game, how he's seen the floor. Like, compared to all the other college players and how we made plays, just watching him, he made everything look so much easier. So it was just great to pick his brain. Like, he worked out with us too that day, so I got to chat it up with him.
Is that kind of the biggest takeaway? What was your biggest takeaway from that week spent there?
The pace and just how you changing the speed could just get you to point A to point B. Since I'm so used to going fast, I mean, I don't have to always go fast. I just got to pick and choose when to use my quickness.
You obviously played so much last year as a freshman. You had to learn on the fly a lot of these things. You could see you getting better game by game, week by week. What was this offseason like for you? How'd you approach it? What were you looking to improve on?
This offseason, I wanted to improve on making my jump shot more consistent. And then just picking people brands about pick and roll. I just want to get that down pack, which I think I've got a lot better just this offseason on pick and roll.
You mentioned the jump shot. How far along do you think that's come? Because I know you didn't shoot the way you wanted to last year percentage-wise.
Yeah.
Where do you feel you're at now? Has it gotten better?
Yeah, because with me, it was like just little mechanical stuff that I tend to do, either like standing up straight or just not following through. So just like the camp alone, like I learned a couple things. Like because we had like a little shooting workout earlier, and I just learned a couple things from him.
I talked to Miles a little bit about, you know, you guys have sort of a veteran backcourt now. The only new guy entering the mix is Quentin Gooden. Mm-hmm. Where is he at so far? He's only been on campus for maybe a month or so. What have you seen from Quentin? What sort of caught your eye about him?
Well, like just think about like myself and other freshmen. He's a lot more mature, like with his game, his body. Like he's ready to play right now. Like. Strength-wise, he's ready to play. Like he's stronger than people on our team right now. Like, then his game-wise, like his vision. I don't really think he knows how much he can impact the game right now because he's a freshman, so he's trying to fit in. But then maybe as the season goes on, he's gonna get that more killer instinct, and then like, okay, I'm used to it now. But yeah, he's ready now.
All right, appreciate you joining us, man. Thanks for the time. All right, we're back. Hayden Field, where the game has just been finalized. Team Davis with a walk-off win. Exciting fashion. We're here with Kaiser Gates now. Kaiser, co-MVP. I mean, what did you think about your performance that earned MVP honors today?
You know, I got picked up at, I think, in round number 10.
So you're a steal.
I was a steal. I was a complete steal. So with me being picked up at round number 10, I was, like, extremely valuable for the place I got picked up at. So I think that kind of played a large factor in me getting co-MVP.
Now, would you say you're more of an offensive player or a defensive player on the softball field?
Softball field, definitely more of an offensive player. I'm a liability on defense. Huge liability.
You guys, a lot of trash talk coming out before this game.
Right.
Everyone thought you might be the favorites. They jump on top early. You guys have two goose eggs there in the middle of the game where it just seems like you couldn't get your offense going. Then you guys started to turn it on. Did you know at a certain point you were going to jump back on top there?
You know, we just wanted to keep it interesting. Let the crowd get some oohs and ahs. Let them feel like it was going to be a blowout. Let them feel like the blue team was going to win. But, you know, we always had it under control. Was always confident in our abilities. Knew we was going to come up on top.
That's good stuff. Let's talk about basketball a little bit. Last year as a freshman, you played on a really good team, a team that was nationally ranked for the entire year, got as high as 5 in the nation, and you were earning minutes and also trying to find a role on a team that was kind of crowded. What was that like for you last year, sort of going through that process and just trying to earn minutes? How did you feel like that process went? Did you feel like you got better and improved as the year went?
I definitely feel like I got better as the year went on because the more time I spent on the court, I feel like the more I progress. So, I mean, it was a process, of course. It's always hard coming in, not playing as much as you used to playing, but once you get past that, once you buy into the team and you see the team's winning games and you do what you're supposed to do for the team, like all plays out on the end.
Now, I know AAU is obviously a different setting. Summer ball is a different setting, but when I had seen you in high school, the thing that stood out was your offensive skill, your ability to shoot, your ability to score. Last year, I think you really earned your minutes because of your ability to defend and be versatile. Was that something that you sort of latched onto early and realized that was a way you could get minutes by focusing on defensive end? Or has that always been a big part of your game?
I've always liked playing defense, to be honest with you, but once I got to the college level, I just had to intensify more, realizing that defense is the way you get on the floor. So once I started realizing, like, yo, if you play more defense, like, you'll get more playing time. So I kind of keyed into that a little bit more than I usually do.
Now, your versatility on the defense, I mean, it feels like you could guard multiple positions. I mean, do you feel comfortable when you're switching ball screens that you can guard a two or even a point guard out on the floor when you have to get switched on there?
Yeah. I really do feel comfortable guarding almost any position on the court.
This offseason, how did you approach that? What were you looking to improve on specifically? What type of things was your big focus?
Getting more consistent with my jump shot. There's a lot of games where I would go like 0 for 2, 0 for 3, 0 for 4, whatever. The next game I'll go 4 for 6. So I'm just trying to get more consistent and keep getting up shots, work my ball handling a lot more, get stronger, add more weight. Just kind of work on like my all-around game, to be honest with you.
You mentioned adding some weight. It looks like you've gotten a little bit thicker, a little bit stronger. How much weight did you add, do you know?
Since I got to school, I think I've added 25 pounds.
And since last season, how much do you think you've added just this offseason?
15.
15, wow. All right. Appreciate your time, man. Congratulations on the MVP award.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. All right, we're wrapping things up here after the softball game. Trayvon Blewett now joining us on the podcast. Trey, tough loss for you guys on the softball field, so I won't even go into that. Mm. last week you got the chance to go to Nike Skills Academy. What was that experience like for you? Take us through sort of the week. We talked to Edmund a little bit about it. He sort of described what you guys did. So what was kind of your takeaway? What did you do during the week?
You know, we just pretty much did a lot of skill work, a lot of playing against each other, and a lot of film work, you know, just to kind of give a good glimpse of how pros, you know, go about their daily lives. You know, it's just eat, sleep, you know, basketball. That's all it is. And, you know, it was a good experience just to be around the top players in the country and seeing all pros like LeBron, Rudy Gay, Devin Booker, and all of them, you know, and hearing their stories and how they got there and what they do, you know, to stay in the league. You know, it kind of gives us a good feedback and good take on, you know, what to expect.
You mentioned the film work. That's something that's kind of interesting. I feel like it would be unique because obviously you do a lot of film work at the college level, but how different was it watching it with those guys and the things they were talking about and pointing out to you?
It was a lot more thorough. It was thorough and a lot more smooth. I mean, they break things down from, you know, we may watch film of just the game, like the first half, first 5 minutes, but they break it down from every dribble pull-up, defense, rebounding. You know, they split it up in categories. So it's, like, real thorough, real precise, and they just go into a lot more detail than, you know, that of college videos.
Everyone enjoy, I think all the scouts and writers like myself who go down there and cover that stuff enjoy watching the games, the scrimmages that you play. It's a mix of guys playing together. How did you feel you did playing against and with NBA guys and other college players that are tops in the nation?
I feel like I did pretty good, you know, just being able to be out there with the guys. I mean, it's tough because college and the NBA are two different completely levels. You know, they play different. You play different types of games. So, you know, like, for instance, Rudy Gay and Devin Booker, them playing, you know, they play different than how we play. So, you know, as far as, like, the pace and stuff. So it was tough trying to adjust to them. But as far as, you know, overall just playing and having a good experience, you know, it was good.
Edmund talked a lot about ball screen stuff. Was that – did you feel like that was big, just seeing how they use ball screens and that?
Yeah. He was in the guard group, so they probably worked on a lot of ball screens. But for, like, the wing group, we worked on it a little bit. But ours was just more of, you know, finishing the transition. You know, running on the wing, catching it, making a move, finishing strong at the basket, or whether it's a drive, drift, shoot. So, you know, I think ours was just more working on, you know, moving without the ball and stuff like that.
Now, you declared for the draft after last season, did some workouts, ended up coming back to Xavier. Who all did you work out for, and what was that experience like?
I ended up working out for the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Boston Celtics, and I would say that was a good experience, too. It was just an opportunity for me to get some feedback, get some true, honest opinion on my game and, you know, where they see me or if I can make it. And I think it benefited me. You know, I was able to pinpoint what I needed to work on to get to the next level, and hopefully I can do that.
What types of things did they tell you?
Major thing was just my body. They said I need to mold myself into physical shape, like look the part, basically. Look like I'm a two guard, look like I play the three. And that's what I need improvement on the most. And I would say, secondly, you know, they said just working on my ball handling. You know, it's not bad, but just being in the league now, you know, they got 6'6" point guards and all that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna have to learn how to be able to dribble the ball and stuff like that.
So do you feel like you've made strides in those areas this offseason, both your body and your ball handling?
Certain points. I feel like I, you know, could work a little bit better on my body. You know, that's just feel like that's a work in progress. Hopefully I get it there before November. As far as the ball handling, you know, I think I've tuned that up a little bit. I feel a lot more comfortable than I did before. So, you know, hopefully I improved on that.
All right. Appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, so that wraps it up for this year's Xavier Softball World Series. Again, Team Davis with the come-from-behind walk-off win 19-18 over Team Gaston. Co-MVPs, you heard from one of them, Kaiser Gates. The other one was Miles Davis. I'll be honest, not exactly sure what either one of those guys did. I'm sure they played fine and scored some runs or something. But if I'm being honest, I think Sean O'Mara, even though he was on the losing team, Team Gaston, deserved MVP honors. I think he was robbed. He finished 4-for-4. His first at-bat was an absolute bomb over the left center field wall. The first home run that got over a fence in Xavier Softball World Series history, in its three-year history. His second at-bat was an inside-the-park home run, or at least that's how it was ruled. probably a little generous on the error there. I think, you know, you might have been able to throw an error there. But, hey, with what we saw, the defense we saw today, you've got to be a little bit generous. So he gets an inside-the-park home run in the second at-bat. His third at-bat was a double, and his fourth at-bat was nearly another home run that left the yard. Hit off of the top of the wall. Just an outstanding day for Sean O'Mara at the plate. I would say on the defensive side, it was assistant coach Luke Murray who had the biggest play. He tracked one of J.P. McCura's fly balls deep to left field, butted up against the tall wall out there at Hayden Field, and reeled in the catch while he was going up against the wall. Pretty impressive stuff considering the rest of the defense we saw throughout the day. On the humorous side of things, I thought, you know, kind of one of the highlights was Edmund just at the plate, just willingly telling everyone how bad he is and going up there with the bat on his shoulder and everyone telling him not to swing, him just begging for walks. He did that his first two at-bats, drew walks. His third at-bat, he did some type of weird swinging bunt thing, which I'm not sure how legal it was, but because he kind of swung his bat, they let him get away with it, was able to use his speed that way. So that was kind of funny watching him at the plate. Tyreek Jones, also, his bat throwing was kind of funny. He was an habitual bat thrower today. There were others that threw the bat, but the thing that stood out about Tyreek was he hit Kaiser Gates one of the times, who was catching, and then Kaiser had to walk off a shin bruise. It didn't look good for a second. But, the guys just throwing bats constantly, having zero clue, looking like toddlers swinging their first wiffle ball bat was pretty outstanding. Also, on the note of Tyreek, both he and Quentin Gooden, both freshman guys, looked like they had a great time. Not quiet guys by any means. They were both very loud and just right in the mix there with their teammates. Both seem like they're fitting in great, and I think they're going to have a lot of fun this year. Another thing that, you know, when you come to the Xavier Softball World Series, I think if you have kids, it's a great way to get them up close and personal with the players for a picture, an autograph. All the players are just awesome in that regard. I personally was up next to Trayvon while he was signing some autographs and taking pictures with the kids, and they just couldn't be kinder to the kids and take more time with them. Any of those guys are more than willing to do that type of stuff if you come to this event. So if you are looking for autographs or pictures, this is probably the best time of the year that I can think of to get that type of thing done. Also, there are always Xavier celebrities that come by. Last year, it was Matt Stainbrook and Samaje Christen. This year, Matt Stainbrook was back, but he was doing the PA, and he was very funny. I hope he has a long basketball career, but as soon as he is done with it, I am hoping he will contact me and be willing to do some type of podcast, or before he gets into the media industry, I hope he contacts me first. I can't wait to see what he does in media, because he's going to be awesome if he decides he wants to do that type of thing. Tu Holloway was also at the game this year. He's in town, just signed a deal with a team in Italy. I think he's excited about that, but in typical Tu fashion, when reporters went up there to talk to him and put him on camera, and Jeremy Rao asked him, you know, if his goal was to get to the NBA or what it was, he just looked back at him and replied, my goal is to get rich, and that was it. He just stared at him after that, blank-faced, and everyone kind of laughed awkwardly, and it was outstanding. If you haven't seen the video, I have tweeted it. Go look at it, because it is just an awesome internet video. The final Xavier celebrity, Byron Larkin, was coaching Team Gaston. And one of the funny things about this, and this goes for like Coach Mack too, is those type of guys, when they get in these competitive settings, no matter how ridiculous the actual contest is out on the field, because most of it's just guys throwing the ball around and not being able to catch, it's just awful softball. Yet Byron, by like the second inning, had completely forgotten that he has an actual day job and that he also broadcasts Xavier basketball. Like, the only thing on his mind, I'm pretty certain, was that he's a softball manager. I mean, he was 100% into the game, yelling at refs, coaching guys from the dugout, was totally into it. And I think it's hilarious to see, and same goes for Mac. I mean, he's so into it. He's ate up that they lost in a come-from-behind fashion. He's going to have to listen to ridiculing around the office for the next 364 days. That side of it is funny, but also having a guy like Byron so close to these kids and his personality is so great, but being around the guys to talk to them, and throughout the year, sometimes I think they may need a pep talk from a guy who scored more points than anyone else in school history, and a guy who might not be their coach, and a guy who they kind of trust and have already developed a rapport or relationship with. Byron always seems to be that guy. And these are some of the reasons why, because he's around the program so much, because he fits in so well when he is there. He's not an old timer saying, you know, back in my day, this is how it went or whatever. The kids respond to him so well. And it's always fun to see that, I think. Okay, so the final thing I wanted to do to wrap up this podcast, I told you guys on Twitter that while I was driving home, you could submit some questions for me, and I would try to answer them. So I am going to do that right now. Ahead of time, since I am by myself, I don't have Dan or Snow here. This may get extremely boring if you want to turn the podcast off now. I'm fine with that. I don't blame you at all. I would go ahead and do it. We'll see you next time. Otherwise, I will answer some Twitter questions here, and I'm just going to read them right out of my mentions. So this may suck. We'll see how it goes. The first one from McMurray JT, I can always count on him for this, coming in strong with, who is Xavier's Joe Flacco? One who constantly had his eliteness questioned. I'd argue Mark Lyons. Mark Lyons is not a bad answer for that, I think. I think Mark Lyons was really good. The only problem with Mark Lyons is he legitimately is Joe Flacco. Like, there, you can legitimately question whether or not Mark Lyons was elite. There is an argument to say that he isn't an elite Xavier player, even though I would probably argue that he was. The guy for me that it just doesn't make sense when people constantly question how good he was is Samaje Christen. I think because he left early and maybe, you know, because the NBA thing didn't work out for him initially, although it looks like it may now, a lot of people seem to be down on him or always looking to sort of degrade his game a little bit. Never made sense to me. I mean, if you talk about the most talented players during the Chris Mack era, to me, it's pretty easily. I mean, Jordan Crawford's number one without question. And then maybe Edmund Sumner might be in that second slot, but I don't think we're to that point of saying that yet. The second guy for me is Samaje Christen. And either way, even if Edmund's above him, then it's probably Jordan, Edmund, and then Samaje. But either way, Samaje is one of the most talented and best players to come through Xavier in the history of the program. I never get it why I see so many people just questioning. I mean, it's very small things, too, that people have. The issues people have with his game are always small things. So never really makes much sense to me. The next question here from CJ Lecker. Sorry, I'm not sure. I'm probably butchering that. But it is a Cincy sports question that was posed to Mo Egger. And it was, what will come first? A Reds playoff series win, a Bengals playoff game win, a UC Final Four, a UC making the football playoffs, or Xavier making the Final Four? So Mo answered this with the Bengals playoff win, and I think that's right. I think that's an easy choice. So how I would rank these would be Bengals playoff game win number one, Xavier makes a Final Four number two, Reds win a playoff series number three, UC makes a Final Four number four, and UC makes the football playoff number five. Now, that may sound like a homer pick. People are going to say you're bashing UC, whatever. I disagree. One, the UC makes the football playoff thing just not happening. I mean, it's not going to happen ever. Like, even if they get into another conference, it's not going to happen. But right now, as things stand, it's certainly not going to happen. The only argument I think could be made is that UC Final Four should be over Reds playoff series, because the Reds are so far away from being relevant in the major leagues that it's ridiculous. The reason I have UC under the Reds in that scenario, UC making a Final Four, that is because I just think it's a lot harder for a college basketball team to make a Final Four than I do the Major League Baseball team to win a playoff series. Now, the reason I have Xavier ahead of the Reds is because the current trajectory of Xavier's program suggests to me that, like, that could be a possibility in the next 4 or 5 years. Now, I'm not saying it will. That's a really difficult thing to do. You need a lot of luck, for one. But you look at the way Xavier's recruit. First of all, you look at where Xavier was last year. I mean, like, a top five program. They're going to be around that again this year. So, I mean, the potential is even there for it to happen this year. I'm not saying that should be expectations or anything like that. But the potential is certainly there for Xavier to make a Final Four run in the next year or so even. And when you look at the conference, the Big East is great for Xavier. And the recruiting just continue. The recruiting profile for Xavier just continues to raise. So the 2017 class is already looking really impressive. I think, you know, there's a reasonable chance Xavier makes a Final Four in the next 5 years. So that is why I had them number two. Hopefully that answers that question. Next question coming from @TurboTrigga. Nice. Where is the program in the eyes of today's recruits across the landscape, tier two, tier three? Does that vary by location? Trying to get a sense of how X is viewed next to an IU, UNC, UCLA as current and former Blue Bloods, but also UC Dayton, etc. Well, I do think, like, the biggest reason Xavier continues to bring in good recruits and continues to raise the brand and profile of the school is they win in the tournament. That's the biggest deal for any program in my mind. But after you've done those things, which Xavier was doing in the Atlantic 10 already, the biggest change that's happened recently for Xavier is, of course, the move to the Big East. And I think it's made a significant difference. Like, I think you can see for where Xavier used to be in a similar spot to me as Cincinnati and Dayton in terms of their recruiting, meaning they had to get on a player early. They had to really build that relationship up. And then they had to hold off other teams when the teams from the bigger conferences really made that kid a priority. Now, I mean, you look at what Xavier did with this 2017 class. They weren't really recruiting Najee Marshall. I mean, Mike Pegues had laid some groundwork for Najee Marshall during the high school season, but Chris Mack hadn't even seen him play until the evaluation period in April. He sees him play. They decide to make Najee a priority target after that, and then they're able to lock him up before the end of July. Same thing with Elias Harden. They hadn't really recruited him at all until this summer started, and they got out on the recruiting trail. And they're able to take him away out of SEC country from a bunch of high major programs in the SEC and ACC that were recruiting him. Xavier couldn't do that before. And all of a sudden, they can. And a lot of it has to do with this staff. I think they have the best recruiting staff they've had since I've been covering this program right now. But it's all the Big East is a huge, huge part of it. And, you know, I just look at where Cincinnati and Dayton are, and they're in a similar spot to where I felt like Xavier was 2 or 3 years ago with the recruiting. So the big change is really the fact that Xavier's made that jump to the Big East. I think it has just changed the perception a lot, not just the fact that it's a high-profile conference for Xavier and they get to play at Madison Square Garden and things like that, but I think just the national brand of the Big East, even if it's not the Big East of old that everyone wants to talk about, the other schools – the Marquettes, the Georgetowns, even a team like St. John's, who's at the bottom, and Seton Hall, even when they're not good, they still have more national recognition than teams at the bottom of the AAC or the A-10 do. And to me, that is the biggest difference, is just that sort of that national brand. The kids know the teams you're playing with. They've gone to see the teams you're playing with. The teams you're playing against have recruited them. So Xavier being in that group, I think, has changed things dramatically. And so when you start breaking it down to tiers, I don't know that I can do that. Like, it gets very confusing because you're right, Troy. It does vary by location. It also varies by, like, what a kid's parents grew up watching or what they think is important or what they think of certain programs or certain conferences. So there's a lot of variables, and it differs from kid to kid or AAU program. Or state to state, all those things do matter, and it can change from there. But I think the best way for me to describe it would be there's still North Carolina and Kentucky and Kansas, and maybe another school or two are right there in that elite group where they kind of get who they want. Those schools are kind of battling against each other for those top guys that they want. Then after that, I don't think Xavier is next in line after those schools, but they're in the next group. And they can compete head up. Like, if you look at Paul Scruggs, for instance, everyone seems to think Xavier is going to land Paul Scruggs. I agree with that. They're going head-to-head with Indiana. The other schools that were recruiting him, Louisville, Michigan State, and we're talking about national powers here that Xavier's going head-to-head with, and they're chasing some of those national powers off. Michigan State kind of stopped watching Paul Scruggs during July because they heard he's going to Xavier. Same thing with Louisville. They made him less of a priority during July because they felt it was kind of a done deal to Xavier. So I'm not saying it is a done deal. It'll be interesting to see what happens after Paul makes his official visit to Xavier this coming weekend. But there is no doubt that Xavier now can go head-to-head with these top programs that maybe aren't quite the Blue Bloods, the three or four Blue Bloods, but right behind that group, and they can go head-to-head and get guys that they want. Now, are they going to be able to do that every time? No, but none of those schools can. So they're in that mix, and it's been a very impressive rise out on the recruiting trail and the way they're being viewed by recruits. XU2000 asks, any more four-star basketball recruits on the horizon? Well, as I kind of just brought up, Paul Scruggs, I think there's so much information on Paul Scruggs on the message board right now that just go there and read it if you want the details. But I can't find anybody, haven't been able to find anybody that I've talked to for the last month that thinks Paul Scruggs is going anywhere but Xavier. So, yeah, I think he'll be the next commitment if I had to guess. And he would be a four-star, most highly rated player in the 2017 class so far for Xavier. So there you go, Nick. Seabass, XU, what do you miss most from Devereaux? Well, that easy call right here. That's jumping Jamal Walker's unbelievable play-by-play going live over the PA. Nothing like that. It was electric every weekend in Woodward's gym. I was willing to spend a full Saturday and Sunday, sometimes not even watching Xavier players, just to hear Jumpin' Jamal's voice, just to hear some live action, just to hear we going uptown, just to hear him call Sean Kilpatrick killer. All of those things were just unbelievable. The second thing I missed the most from that was when the college players actually played, which they haven't the last 2 years, and Jalen being a point dunker. I mean, Jalen point dunker during the summer, there are not many forms of basketball that I enjoy more than that. It was super entertaining, so I miss both of those things very much, and RIP in peace to the Devereaux League. Next question here, Lomlin, something like that, 266, ask, what do you think our chances at landing Wilkes are? How about Scruggs? Like I talked about Scruggs, I think very good. Both Wilkes and Scruggs, guys, we've done nothing but talk about them for like a month on the message board. So there is tons of information, I mean, full threads devoted to just those guys. So if you are listening to this podcast and you're not subscribed to Musketeer Report, sign up. Just do it right now. It costs you like a lunch to go out and subscribe for the month, get all your recruiting information, get answers to any questions you have throughout the recruiting process for these kids. We'll gladly answer those. We've got the best recruiting analyst in the country in Brian Snow, who is on our message board daily. You really can't beat it for the money. I would really suggest if you want to learn more about those guys, you want to get more up-to-date stuff on these guys, you would do that. As far as the chances of landing Chris Wilkes, the short version would be I'd say Xavier is in the top three programs there. He's narrowed his list down to like 10 or 11 schools, I think, and I would say Xavier's probably in the top three. But again, there's a lot more to get into with that recruitment, and that's all available on musketeerreport.com, the premium message board. JWalls14 says, Kaiser Gates, what's his role this year? I think he's so not talked about as a big-time player. Think he could be borderline NBA. Not sure if I'm willing to make the NBA jump with him yet. I just need to see more of his development, see where he's going to develop as a player. I'm really interested to see where Kaiser goes, because I think if you remember before last season, I had said multiple times, even though other people disagreed, including the coaching staff, that Kaiser Gates and McKinday London were basically battling it out for one spot going forward. Kaiser clearly won that battle. He got more minutes, and McKinday ended up transferring. So that is exactly how things played out. And the biggest thing was Kaiser bought in on the defensive end and found minutes in a defensive role. The big jump I expect him to make is I think he's going to be a really nice offensive contributor too. Now, is he going to be a guy who creates a lot and does a lot of things off the dribble? Probably not, but I think he can be a knockdown three-point shooter. And then he's also an athletic guy who can kind of slash, cut to the basket, maybe get a few oops or whatever, but also offensive rebound, hopefully. I think he has some upside there. I think he'll show more of that. In terms of his role on this year's team, I expect him to be the sixth man. I think the starting lineup will look like Edmund Sumner at the one, Miles Davis at the two, J.P. McCure at the three, Trayvon Blewett at the four, and Rasheed Gaston at the five, if I had to guess. And that would leave Kaiser Gates pretty much as your sixth man. Now, he'll probably be close in minutes with a guy like Sean O'Mara. If Sean is coming off the bench, Sean could play a ton of minutes there at the five, switching out with Rasheed Gaston. I kind of expect those two to split minutes 50-50 at the five. But Kaiser can fill in multiple spots, you know, because he's long, because he can guard multiple positions. We talked about that earlier in this podcast. He is a guy that can earn more minutes because of his versatility. So I think both at, you know, subbing in for both JP and Trayvon kind of in that 3-4 spot or whoever else is playing those positions, but subbing in kind of at that 3-4 spot and sliding guys around, however you need to do it, Kizer allows you to do that because of his versatility, because of the way he can defend. Xavier doesn't really care about the positions near as much on the offensive end. So his defensive ability gives him a lot of upside and can really increase his role. I think his role will be much bigger this year without question. Mike Federle. X has shown the ability to develop productive bigs by the time they're junior seniors. So is Sean O'Mara poised for a breakout year? I do think Xavier has done a good job of developing bigs by the time they're juniors and seniors. But I think for a lot of bigs, that's just kind of the timeline, right? Unless you are a one-and-done type prospect or just a highly rated five, maybe even top-of-the-line four-star guy, most big men take a little bit more time to get acclimated to college basketball, to figure out footwork, technique, positioning, all these things that are essential, or you're just going to get bullied by guys that are more experienced, a lot more physical and just strong on the block. So in that regard, I think a lot of guys kind of hit their stride by junior, senior year. Sean O'Mara specifically, I thought last year he could have played more, honestly, but you had James Farr and Jalen Reynolds ahead of him. So he wasn't better than those two guys. But in practice, I thought he was pretty darn good, and he was the best offensive player in terms of scoring with his back to the basket on the block last year that the team had. So this year, I think the difference between him and Rashid is I think Rashid will be a little bit better as a defender and a much better rebounder. For Sean, I think he's going to be a better low post scorer. So I think you'll kind of use those two guys in tandem in and out at the five. I think Sean is going to have definitely a breakout year. I think he's going to have a much bigger role this season. I think he's going to score double digits on the block. I think he'll average around 10, maybe a little bit more than that per game on the offensive end. And the other thing, and I talked about this with some of the other guys like Rashid earlier in this podcast, is he has dropped a lot of weight. And I'm interested to see how that's going to affect his game. I hope that doesn't take away his ability to just kind of seal guys deep in the post and bully them with his backside and score on them. I'm hoping it just makes him quicker, more well-conditioned, better defensively for his sake. But either way, I do expect a pretty big year for Sean O'Mara and certainly a jump up from what we saw last season. Let me see. Any more questions? Okay, one final question here from Corey P. 123. Is playing time strictly a commensurate with practice effort? Guys will inevitably have bad practice weeks, so I wonder. Yes and no. I would say, look, the best players are going to play, and that's just how it is. I mean, there's weeks your best players don't practice, and they sit out, you rest them, they're nursing injury, whatever. But based on, like, when it comes down to two players that are very similar or kind of interchangeable players, which very rarely happens, does practice performance matter? And my thing would be, yeah, it absolutely does. For instance, I would think, like, with Jalen Reynolds, it was a guy that it definitely mattered with a certain amount. There were games last year where he had, you know, a really good few weeks leading into practice, and you would see him get a few more minutes that game. Staff knows, hey, his head's in it, he's focused, he's worked hard, let's let him run a little bit. Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question to answer, honestly, but for the most part, it has to do with how good you are, first and foremost. And then the rest of it is kind of dictated by practice and how you perform there. So, like, the coaching staff obviously doesn't know you're good unless you practice well. So there's a certain responsibility that you have to practice well to get on the court. But at a certain point, it's like, look, it's not like they're reshuffling their lineup each week based on who practiced the best. So hopefully that kind of answers your question. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you're looking for, but that's what I gave you. So I think that is it. That does it for this podcast. Again, if you are not subscribed to Musketeer Report right now and you're just listening to this podcast, I would encourage you. I think a lot of people, you know, you hear, oh, July is a terrible month for sports. There's nothing nothing going on and you feel like it's not college basketball season, this is one of the busiest times on our message board. And it's not done yet because there's still three more spots potentially in this 2017 recruiting class. I think there is some big recruiting news to come here in short order. So there is a lot of stuff to be talking about on the message board right now. We've been going strong for over a month now of just nothing but recruiting talk. The last 2 weeks on the message board have been some of the biggest weeks ever. We've had a lot of new signups for the board. And the value is not just me being on there with quote-unquote premium information. A big part of it is having Brian Snow, who's just outstanding. But then also, there's all these posters that we have. Some, you know, get some of their own sources, which is what it is. But a lot of them are just have interesting takes, are very smart people. They're funny, or they're asking good questions to facilitate the conversation. There's a lot of value to the MusketeerReport.com premium message board. And we it's a lot tighter. We don't get off onto all these tangents. There's not all the bickering that you see in a lot of other places. It's a little bit more just focused on whatever the topic is and information, and it's really enjoyable. And again, you're talking about $10 a month. You spend that at Starbucks in the morning or at Chipotle for lunch. So just go ahead and sign up. You won't regret it. Give us a chance, and I think you'll enjoy it. If you're still listening, God bless you. Thank you for listening for this special edition podcast, the World Series edition of the podcast. For Rashid, Miles, Ed, Kaiser, Trayvon, really appreciate those guys being so gracious with their time. I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.